What's up, everybody? Thanks for joining us for the Layover Podcast. This is the B2B behind-the-scenes sneak peek into the world of travel marketing. And we have a super exciting guest for you today. Dan Sherman is the Chief Marketing Officer of Ski.com. Ski.com is the world's largest provider of mountain vacations. And he's a regular contributor to publications like the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and USA Today on the topic of ski travel and the travel industry around the skiing industry. And prior to that, Dan was at Edelman leading PR for clients like Norwegian Cruise Lines, Expedia, and Microsoft. Dan, thanks so much for coming on, man. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Excited to chat today.
Cool. So why don't we jump right into it? You know, I know I gave a little bit of a quick synopsis on your background, but would love to hear about your career. You know, I think a lot of marketers who are enthusiasts around travel, especially adventure travel, dream of, you know, getting out of corporate life and going over to something that allows them to live out their passions every single day. And I know you've been an avid skier for a long time. So talk to us a little bit about your journey.
Well, the journey, it's I was just talking to my kids recently about pivotal moments and what that means. And The journey is basically the result of some pivotal moments. So I was, I'll go way back because it all matters. I was at the University of Connecticut. I grew up in Michigan. I was going to school at UConn, and I was home for a summer internship. And Kellogg's is based where I grew up in Battle Creek. And I kind of talked my way into a PR internship at Kellogg's Cereal City USA, which was a themed museum around the history of cereal. And I really enjoyed that internship, and it changed everything in my curriculum and changed my major. And I focused on PR. And that was a pivotal moment, which brought me to Edelman in Chicago. The woman I worked with, Kathy Kringer, at Kellogg's, ended up being at Edelman. She brought me over there more or less. And that's where I ended up. Well, I started doing PR for Butterball Turkey, actually during Thanksgiving. And then I ended up on the travel team, and I had big accounts like Expedia and Norwegian Cruise Line, as you mentioned. And there's a long side story I'll skip, but somehow Edelman, which at the time and maybe still is the biggest PR firm in the world, scored the Ski.com account. And Ski.com was kind of small potatoes in this big, big world of PR. And I happened to be the only skier in the group. So because I was already passionate about it, they kind of handed me the account and said, here you go, this one's yours. I was like, well, this couldn't be better. This really accidentally aligned, you know, my passion with my profession. So I worked on that account only for about 7 months, and for other reasons, I ended up leaving Edelman. I went to work for a music company, and on the day of my non-compete expired, I got a call from the owners, and they said, why don't you come over to ski.com and work for us full-time on staff? So that was 19 years ago I got that call. So it's been a wild ride, and like I said, kind of accidentally or serendipitously fell into this great combination of passion and business.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, I think it's important as marketers that, you know, sometimes it's hard to work on an account that you're not enthusiastic about, that you don't have that deep, you know, industry expertise, especially for something as passion driven as sports or skiing. You know, I'm a big surfer, so I always chase accounts from when I've worked at agencies, I always find myself, you know, calling on surf brands. And even though it's not the most lucrative sector, you know, I think you kind of sometimes you are pointed in the direction of like the things that you're passionate about in your normal life. So, you know, I was lucky enough to broker Adobe, which was a big client of mine's sponsorship with the World Surf League. So got to, you know, surf the Kelly Slater wave pool on the day of when, you know, they allowed the sponsors to kind of come in and have an experience before the tournament started. So, you know, there's ways that you can kind of point your enthusiasm in the direction of some of these things. But it's awesome that you ended up landing, you know, at a brand that you had that experience with on the agency side and got to run marketing. So, was it hard for you at all to move from you know, being a PR practitioner on the count to running the entire marketing program and platform over there? Or was that an easy transition for you?
No, I think it was pretty easy. And it's been, you know, like I said, this was 19, I've been in at ski.com for 19 years. So this has been a long evolution. I've been CMO for 8 years, I guess. So
it's been
10 years to go into the overall marketing. But it was, to me, it seemed like an easy transition. From a PR perspective early on, you know, in addition to doing the media relations and pitching and writing press releases, kind of started managing the content of the website and the newsletters. And that just evolved into all the communication, both, you know, paid media, the ads, the, you know, Google, everything. It kind of made sense. I know in most companies, those are very separate silos, but they all kind of came together at ski.com, and it's a small company. So it makes sense, but yeah. And then we still have it. We have a PR and content team, and we have a digital marketing team internally, but, it all just kind of clicked for me.
Nice. So why don't you walk us through the business model of ski.com a little bit for those that might not be familiar? Seems like you guys are an online travel agency. You guys are a media company. You guys are a bit of a hybrid. Can you walk us through the different offerings and the way you guys monetize your audience?
Yeah, it's a common question, and our name doesn't really help being kind of ambiguous. So ski.com.
But a great URL though, right? You can't get any better.
URL. When I first started, I wasn't loving the URL because it sounded like it was all digital. It was all new and digital. And we actually were founded here in Aspen in 1971 as Aspen Ski Tours. Really our main selling point are people. It's offline relationships. Mm-hmm. So ski.com is a travel company. OTA, you know, online travel company, travel agency. We have some of those traits, but that's not really how we define ourselves. Ski vacations are a very complicated form of travel. There's a lot. They're very expensive. They can be very expensive, and there's a lot of factors. Is it accommodation, ski in, ski out? Is this mountain right for me? What kind of lift ticket do I need? Equipment rentals. There's just a lot of variables. So we do offer the ability to book all of these things online, but really they're confusing. So where we stand apart is that we have people, 60 mountain travel experts who travel the world, getting a firsthand experience of all the resorts, the hotels, the condos, the private homes and chalets, so that when they get in touch with a client, whether it's on the phone or an email, they get a request of a certain kind of vacation. They know from experience what the person might be looking for and can put together a custom ski vacation package. So really at the end of the day, we are a travel agency that's really dedicated to ski vacations.
Wow. That's cool. Do you, as a marketer, get a partake in those, you know, those tours? Do you get I think I read in your bio, you've been to over 64 resorts or something crazy like that.
Yeah, I think it's closer. I think I counted this winter, and I think that it was just under 90.
Wow.
that is definitely a perk of the job. So I'm based in Aspen. The company's based in Aspen, although many of us don't live here anymore. There are people kind of spread out all over. But yeah, there are a lot of perks. First of all, I've gotten to meet a lot of really great people in the industry. You know, the vibe of the ski travel industry is fantastic. And I've gotten to go to a lot of great places and not just visit those places, but really get the red carpet treatment. Whether I'm there with coworkers who are touring it for, you know, so they can be able to sell it, or I'm there with media, press, you know, press trips. I really feel like I get a, you know, experiences that not everybody would get to have. And I'm pretty fortunate in that sense. So, a lot of travel to Europe. I was just there a couple of weeks ago. A lot of travel to Japan, and of course, US, Canada, and here, even in my backyard in Aspen, a lot of great perks because of the job.
Yeah, I bet. So I think that's fascinating. You guys have these, you know, 60 travel advisors that essentially kind of ski the world and do the homework for your audience and your clients. And I think that leads naturally into, you know, how do you leverage the fact that you've got these folks out there as media content creators, editorial? Like, are those folks out there, you know, experiencing these tours so they can advise clients? But, you know, to scale that, are you guys creating a massive amount of content when these guys are out there? Are you shooting video? How do you leverage that network from a, like a media creation perspective or an editorial perspective?
Such a great question. Frankly, we haven't historically done a great job of that. And, you know, part of it is a generational thing, honestly. So we have our, I don't know what the average tenure is these days, but it's probably over 20 years doing this. We have some of the mountain travel experts have been here for over 30 years.
Wow.
But we do have some great newer, younger ones, and that has been a very hot topic lately. And as a matter of fact, so we just had four different groups going to four different locations in Europe, touring our top resorts and some of our underrated resorts. And one of the to-dos for everybody was to start getting content and creating reels. And we have a bunch of shared folder with just raw footage. And that will get worked up into, you know, trying to tell the story, which has been really hard. It's probably one of the hardest parts of the job is to tell the story in an easy to understand way so that, a consumer coming to ski.com or seeing us on social can understand exactly who we are. Ski.com, again, just this just ambiguous name. We're a travel company, but we're not just a travel company. We're a travel company that offers, you know, these custom vacation packages from real people who are doing real things. So that's a really big focus for us for next year is, you know, showing video, photos, content of our people in the field, doing what we love to do so that we can create these memorable experiences for our clients.
Yeah. And it seems like you guys have taken a step in that direction. One of the things that I, you know, saw multiple times doing the research for this show is a campaign that you guys launched a couple of years ago called the Dream Job Campaign, where you got basically aspirational content creators to submit for this dream job of getting to travel around the world and visit all these locations or visit a portion of the locations that you guys offer and create content. I think the first year you had over 1,500 submissions on social for people to get this dream job. One lucky gentleman was awarded the opportunity, and I think he got to go to like 8 different mountains in a period of time, got paid to do it. So it really is the dream job. And it seems like you guys have figured out a way to scale that now and do it with multiple creators now. Versus just one. Can you talk a little bit about that campaign, the evolution? Seems like it's been a really successful program for you and kind of, you know, represents that new school way of the direction that you guys are heading.
Yeah, that campaign was a lot of years in the making. As a matter of fact, we pitched it originally from Edelman. It was an idea from 20 years ago that it never really came to life. And then we finally did it actually in 2019, we launched it.
Wow.
2018 we launched it. So yeah, it was a multifaceted campaign. It got a lot of press. It got a lot of attention from influencers. It got a lot of engagement on social. And it had different phases, you know, looking for a content creator to go, you know, the idea was actually to kind of, mimic what it would be like to be the ski.com mountain travel expert who has the dream job, but then not just go experience it, but document it so that we could share it with other people. So in year one, we hired a guy named Jackson Lebsack, who went to 20 resorts in 7 countries and 3 continents in 30 days.
Wow.
So it not only went there, he created content on this trip and not like daily content. He was doing short form video clips every day and then longer form at the end of the trip. And, you know, the guy was superhuman. There was no sleep involved.
Sounds like it.
So I was lucky to join him for 3.5 weeks in Europe. And that was the beginning, and he was worked. And then that evolved into the next year we did, teams of two, and they could be, they could have known each other. It could be two individuals that were matched together. And we did six resorts in Europe, Japan, Canada, and the U.S. And this campaign was gaining huge momentum. Actually, I remember vividly, I was at Opry in Verbier, Switzerland in year one with Jackson. And people came up to us and said, "Are you Jackson Lebsack?" And
wow. You know,
this is really getting some great momentum. But unfortunately, year two, it ended right when COVID started.
Okay, so it was a COVID victim, like so many COVID, other things.
COVID casualty. We get asked all the time if we're going to bring it back, and we should. But we have such great content and great relationships. It's just a great experience all around, and we should bring it back to life. It was a great campaign to work on.
Yeah, well, it just seems like so many. You know, I was talking to a PR person at Delta the other day, and, you know, they're trying to figure out the same thing. Like, how do they leverage the fact that they've got, you know, these flight attendants, and some of them are influencers now, these like own content creators within their network. You guys have it on a smaller scale, but you have it under a category that people are really passionate about and want to research. So I think a lot of brands and a lot of organizations are trying to figure this out. Like, how do they leverage their employee brand or their frontline workforce and turn them into a content engine? And it's getting easier and easier. You know, it's almost like everybody needs to have a personal brand now. Everybody needs to be able to create video, whether it's for LinkedIn or TikTok. So it seems like you guys are on the right track with that.
Part of it was, you know, we were looking for influencers kind of on the ground level. And we had people that were applying that were big deal influencers. But for the dream job, in addition to paying them, I think we paid $10,000. But part of the deal was, we're going to give you $10,000. We're going to give you gear from our partners, get you all outfitted with skis and, you know, the whole nine. But fame and glory. So we were going to, you know, blast you out on all our channels and our partner channels. And Jackson went on to be the content creator in-house for Jamie O'Brien right after that.
So
he was doing the Who is J-O-B. And actually, he was there with another one of the Dream Job guys who met. We sent them both to Japan together. And then they went and lived with Jamie, and we're doing that film, that video project. So I'd like to think that he got that job partially, at least because of the dream job.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you guys, I think you're thinking about creator marketing in a way that, you know, a lot of brands struggle, which is like, how do you partner with creators in a way that's authentic? You know, at Lost In, we have a similar belief that we want to work with emerging and mid-sized creators because, you know, at the end of the day, whether it's us licensing videos for them to repurpose and put on our different social media properties across Lost In, which used to be the Bring Me channel for BuzzFeed, or whether it's landscapes, or whether it's a view from my window, you know, we need creators that don't necessarily, you know, our brands that are of equal size or outshine our brand. You know, we essentially need these guys to, you know, license us videos that we can repurpose, go out on an assignment mm-hmm. for clients. And, but it's a great launching pad for them to get additional exposure, and also a way for them to monetize library content, which is so hard for travel influencers. You know, a lot of this content has a very short lifespan. You know, YouTube is maybe a little bit more evergreen, but talk about TikTok or Instagram, you know, most of the views are generated within the first, you know, 24 to 36 hours. And then the video kind of peters off and goes back down to, you know, a pretty trickle in, you know, level. And I think, you know, with the algorithm economy, like YouTube is really the place where you go for evergreen. But, you know, you guys figured out a way to really, like, I mean, having 1,500 mid-size or micro creators apply to work with you, and kind of having that be like this, almost like this contest, like it's way more authentic. And I think like you built excitement around it versus just like, oh, like, hey, you know, we'll pay you X, Y, Z to do this brief. You know, it felt like more of like a exciting campaign.
It was great. There would be no buzz if we had just hired somebody. It was, yeah. It was great. And the last plug I blanked on, but Jackson is now, his project is Sickos. That's his team of buddies. They go around creating content of themselves doing crazy things. So
I love give them that. A follow. I'll have to check it out. We'll link to them in the show notes as well. So did you always have a vision that someday you would merge your career goals of being a marketing exec and then getting to work in the ski industry? Or was that, you know, based on our conversation before, was that more of a right place, right time?
It was a total right place, right time. And I think about it a lot, actually. And I, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I grew up in Michigan and I grew up watching Warren Miller movies and skiing a 300 vertical foot, quote, resort. And I check in with that often and, you know, look in the mirror. I can't believe that I'm doing the things that I'm doing. You know, I had aspirations when I was a kid of living in a ski resort. And when I was living in Chicago, I was like, man, I got to move to Jackson Hole. That's where I really want to be. So it all just kind of, it fell together, like I said, completely serendipitously. And I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah, I love that. So you talked a little bit about, in the Dream Job campaign, you also were able to partner the creators with your other partners. And you mentioned like ski and outfitters and gear. So who are your clients? Are your clients the destination marketing organizations for the region? Are they the resorts? Are they the ski manufacturers and folks that make apparel? Or is it a little bit of all of the above? Like who are your end clients?
Yeah, that's another good question. So really our end client is the traveler.
Got it.
Yep. Really, you know, as a travel company, that's what we're looking out for is the traveler and making sure that they have a really great experience. But we work very closely with all of the other folks you mentioned, specifically, you know, the lodging community at the resorts that we work with. And lodging community is, you know, we're talking 200 resorts all over the world. We have direct relationships with the property managers at the chalets and the you know, whether it's Marriott or a family run hotel, you know, we're in direct communication with those people regularly. And as the largest provider of ski vacation packages in the world, we're a great resource for them to fill their beds. So, you know, those are the two main, and of course the resorts. So we're working with the resorts for mountain products, so lift tickets, lessons, equipment rental, and then all the other, you know, ski guides, third-party ski guides, heli operators, ground transfer companies, the airlines, the rental car companies. So we have, you know, direct relationships with basically anything that touches a vacation package for skiing. When it comes to the gear companies, we do have, you know, we try to work with them in strategic ways because we have a really, you know, we have a large audience of people who obviously have identified themselves to be mountain enthusiasts and ski enthusiasts. So we offer ways to get some brands in front of our audience and often, hopefully, you know, who cares what's in it for me, try to do something that to give our audience some kind of like an exclusive deal or something, some kind of perk for being paying attention to ski.com or booking with ski.com. So for example, there's a local outerwear company here called Strafe. They make a great product, you know, jackets, pants, technical ski gear. And if you book a trip with ski.com, we give a 20% off code for Strafe. And we've done for Dakine and Giro, and we had a relationship with Black Crows as well. So, you know, we pick different partners and we're always looking for other partners that make sense.
Makes sense. So a lot of it is adding value to the skier by giving them opportunities, first looks at gear and discounts and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's not our main thing, but you know, we have a post booking pre-arrival email that goes out that says, all right, get psyched. You're going to the mountains. Now that you got your travel booked, we're here to help you get yourself outfitted. So, you know, if you need a pair of goggles, click here. If you need a jacket, click here. If you need some skis, click here.
Nice. And you talked about the heli skiing and kind of that's what I consider like, you know, the top end of the category, right? Lawson, we cater to who we call the economy plus traveler. It's not the one percenters that are traveling on private jets, but it's, you know, the six percenters, you know, the folks that sit in business class or first class on commercial. They stay in premium lodging because they want a higher end experience. And they're also willing to pay more for exclusivity and things that, you know, are harder to find. Can you talk about some of the, let's say, the more decadent, you know, top end of the packages that you guys offer to skiers that want to ski in powder that very few people get a touch every day?
Yeah, well, so at ski.com, we truly offer something for everyone. And we have a very large B2B business. So travel advisors, most travel advisors book their ski vacations through us. Wow. Some of these travel advisors are very high end, and it's not uncommon for us to book six-figure ski vacations, you know, sometimes, wow, you know, $300,000 or more ski vacations. But for the six percenter type stuff, you know, there's some really great upgrades people can make for heli skiing. And there's two types of heli skiing. There's the day product, where you could be in a place like Whistler and then decide to go heli skiing for a day or 2 days. Or there are the destination, the remote lodge heli skiing. So you take a helicopter, you fly in, they drop you off at the lodge, you're there for a week, and you're every morning you're having breakfast and then going off on the helicopter for the day. Crazy. Totally different price points. And you know, we call the day heli the gateway drug, but it's fantastic. You know, it's fantastic, especially in Canada, where the dollar remains strong against the Canadian dollar. And there are actually some really great deals on day heli products in Canada.
Wow. And then I know cat skiing is kind of this new thing where they take you up in the big, you know, tractor, and you kind of get the experience of skiing runs that don't have lifts, maybe similar to going up in like, you know, snowmobiles and stuff like that. Is that also a big trend that you're seeing right now, people doing that?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's the exact same experience as heli skiing. The difference is the helicopter can get you way farther out faster. A cat, it's, you know, it's fun hanging out in the cat, and it's, I've had some amazing cat skiing days, but it's the same idea. You're getting out of the cat on top of the mountain and you're skiing untracked runs. And it's a fraction of the price of heli skiing.
That's cool.
And it's more reliable. There's sometimes a helicopter can't fly, but a cat can always go.
Yeah. The weather, sometimes doesn't want to cooperate. Right.
Right.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about how travel has impacted your life personally. So what's been your most memorable travel trip?
Well, I think about this a lot. You know, like I mentioned, I've been able to do some pretty amazing things through my job. I got to experience some things that most people probably wouldn't. But the one that I think is the most unique is skiing in Chile and then going to the Atacama Desert. Just the juxtaposition of the two experiences, you know, the packing alone was interesting, but, you know, going down in Portillo, which is just a magical resort. It's basically, it's like, if you're not familiar, it's basically a cruise ship, a big yellow hotel at the bottom of this amazing mountain on a lake. And that's it. That's all that's there. It's this hotel. And I said, people kind of compare it to a cruise ship because they have seated times for dinner and there's, you know, a bar and a disco there, but that's it. It's just the hotel. Wow. And then you go up to the Atacama, which is the driest place on earth. And actually that's kind of like a cruise ship too. Now that I think about it, never thought of it this way, but they have excursions every day from the hotel, and you can either do half day or full day excursions. And you know, you can go up a volcano up to 18,000 feet. You can go soak in a salt pond where it's kind of like, you know, you're just floating on top and you're super buoyant. And there's just all these, it's like being on the moon, and it's just totally different from skiing. And it's incredible you could do that in one trip.
Yeah, it reminds me of, you know, we've been talking to Big Bear, and, you know, here in Southern California, you know, there's a lot of guys that have this bucket list thing of doing like what they call the hat trick, where they, you know, start the day up on the mountain in either Mammoth or Big Bear, and they get some runs in, then they go play golf for 9 or 18 holes, and then they end the day like in the water, you know, getting a surf session. Like there's something cool about, well, that's a great thing about California, is that you have these, you know, different climates and different geologies all over the state. It's such a, you know, nature's playground for that type of activity. But there's something magical about, you know, being up in the snow and then being in a totally different environment. Like, reminds me of like being in Palm Springs and just riding the tram up to the snow, and then you come back down and it's 80 degrees in the desert. More extreme version of that.
I'm doing something similar. I know you beat me with the surfing, but I'm doing something similar on Saturday here in Colorado called the Nines. And it's 9 runs at a basin, followed by 9 holes of golf, followed by 9 innings of baseball at the Rockies game.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Yeah. I think there's something, you know, something about us guys that we, you know, just this idea of having the perfect day or jamming in, you know, as many of your passions into a single, you know, I think it's a cool, you know, it's a cool way to market. And, you know, a lot of brands these days are taking that. Like if you look at Travis Matthew, you know, they're a golf brand that also caters to like the Southern California lifestyle, or, you know, Vuori is, you know, Lululemon meets Southern California lifestyle or surf culture. Or if you look at like a Salty Crew, they're for diving, fishing, surfing, and something else in the water. You know, that's like this, these brands that try and, circle multiple enthusiasm points for the consumer. But if you hit like the Venn diagram of like 4 things that people really love, then they just identify with your brand that much more.
Yep. Love it.
Yep. All right. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, having access and living in Aspen, you know, as a creative, as a marketer, you know, do you incorporate getting out on the mountain and skiing into kind of your creative process? Like if you're stuck on an idea or you're looking to brainstorm, does getting out there and, you know, participating in these mountain sports activities, do you use that as part of your creative process?
Yeah, 100%. And it'll probably come off maybe even a little hokey, but it is. When I'm at this point in my life, and I love cities and I, you know, I love variety, but if I'm away from the mountains for too long, I get a little, I feel like I'm, you know, feel a little claustrophobic. Mm-hmm. So the mountains and skiing definitely like recharge my soul, and it's almost tangible. I can feel it.
Wow. So
if I'm, you know, if I'm stuck, especially in the wintertime, one of my favorite things to do is to hike Highland Bowl. At Aspen Highlands, and you just get this, not about the hike necessarily or the skiing from there, but just the view of Maroon Bells. It just like puts everything into perspective for me and definitely helps me clear my head and think about, you know, think about our audience and our customer. And one of my favorite things to do is think about these things through their lens. Like I'm used to these things, but I still appreciate them and that'll never go away. But if you're coming from Texas or Florida or wherever, and you see this for the first time, I just picture people's minds being absolutely blown by them. So, you know, 2 of the big brand pillars for ski.com are empathy and passion. And I like to check in with those myself. And I also like to remind our staff that's the, like, we do this because we love doing it. You know, we're one of you. We love doing it as much as you love doing it, but actually doing it reminds us how amazing it is. And kind of, it's always a great refresher of, you know, how lucky we are to be able to provide these experiences. So I think that's another great question. And, you know, there are people who do this, you know, at variety of companies who aren't as passionate about the mountains or skiing. And, you know, I get paychecks are paychecks, but I just don't understand it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be hard to, you know, work in this industry and then not, you know, I often, you know, one of the reasons I love Lost In so much is because I feel like I very much identify, like I am the audience, you know, millennial in the core of my earning potential, family, you know, I've got 11-year-old and 9-year-old and 2-year-olds, and all of our travel is tied to family. I oftentimes will, you know, strategically engineer my business travel in order to get some personal travel in with my family as well. And, you know, millennials get a bad rap, but we value experience in a general way, are known to spend money on experiences over material possessions and, you know, travel more often than generations prior to us. So I think, you know, having a passion for what you do, I think it leaks through everything, you know, that you put your hand to. So I love that perspective.
Yeah. And, you know, leisure, the business leisure combination is it's a big deal. When people are traveling to, you know, I would imagine it's relatively exotic, fun places and extending their trip by a day or five. That's big business for sure.
Yep. Yep. 100%. Yeah. I think, you know, brands that want to attract that customer, they've got to also be thinking about like, what are the, you know, cultural moments that people can't get away from? Like Park City had Sundance for so long and now they don't. Right. So
yeah, that's wild to me.
Yeah. That was a big
Boulder. It'll be a different experience down there. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. All right. I wanted to touch on the Mountain Travel Symposium. You know, when I was doing the research, it sounds like you're on the board over there. So what is that organization? What's the mission? Why'd you get involved? And tell me a little bit about your work there.
Yeah, so Mountain Travel Symposium is, you know, what it comes down to, it's a conference. And it's the biggest gathering really in the world every year of the ski travel industry. So you have all the buyers and sellers of travel. So buyers being on my side of the business and sellers being the resorts and hotels, all come together and do business. You know, it's a relationship thing. To me, it's always been just a relationship thing. Where that's really where I learned about the ski industry. It's where I met most of my contacts over the years. So yeah. And that's one of the ways that I have this job. The director of the travel division of Edelman was a keynote speaker at Mountain Travel Symposium. And that's how ski.com saw Edelman. And that's why ski.com hired Edelman, and how I have this job, really. Again, this is a pivotal moment. But yeah, I'm on the board. I've been on the board for about 3 years. And you know, the goal is just to make sure the ski industry, ski travel industry, continues to thrive.
Yeah, I love that. So it's kind of like ITB or one of those markets that are focused on bringing the industry together, but focused specifically on mountain travel.
Yep. Yeah, and it's a vibe like no other travel show. I mean, there's a lot of travel shows out there, but this one, you know, when you go to a travel show, that common denominator is that people love skiing or people love traveling. This one,
right,
it's all these passionate skiers, but not just that. It's thousands of people who have literally formed their lives around skiing. So I think it's a pretty special, it's more than just a conference and doing business. It's a pretty special vibe there. So I've always really appreciated it.
Did they usually host it at a mountain resort during ski season, or is that too dangerous to, you know, everybody will be skipping the content and out on the slopes?
That does happen. It's at a resort every year. And this year it was here. It was in Snowmass. Next year it'll be in Whistler. It travels around. And that is the organizer's worst nightmare, because when it snows, nobody shows up. That's basically the way.
Yeah. Oh man, that's funny. Well, sounds like a really cool organization. We'll have to explore how Lawson can get involved because we love, we're relatively new as a travel media company, so we're learning the ropes. But we're super excited when we get invited to participate, in thought leadership and in marketplaces like that. So thanks for educating our audience about it. So let's talk, let's spend the back half of the show talking about trends in ski travel. You know, you guys are out there scouting the best and the brightest and, trying to give your customers, a sneak peek into where they should be taking their trips. I saw a quote in USA Today, you guys were talking about, you know, kind of the less traveled international ski locations in Asia. Obviously Japan was like a huge thing this year. You know, we couldn't help ourselves. We had to launch a Tokyo book.
Oh, nice.
You know, it was in the archive, so we decided to do a refresh last month and relaunch Tokyo. But, you know, I met several friends this year that were going to Tokyo to ski, and I had never even thought of Tokyo as a ski destination, as somebody that, you know, maybe does 10% of my travel to ski destinations. You know, that wasn't on my radar. I was thinking more like, you know, Canada and places like that. So what are some up and coming spots that you think are going to be exciting for next season?
In Japan.
Yeah.
Well, so Japan just continues to, I want to say surprise me, but there really is no surprise, I guess. We've been selling it for the last 8 years. And I've gone at least once or twice almost every year in the last 8 years. And I just absolutely love it. You know, I love going anywhere. There's a unique vibe in every ski destination, but Japan, you know, you go to Europe and it's different, but it's very similar to the US or Canada. You go to Japan and it's like, you're on another planet. And it's, you know, and there's great skiing, there's great culture, the people are incredible, the food is incredible. So I just can't say enough about how much I love Japan. And we saw it in our numbers last year. We were up, you know, during the booking season, like in October, I think we were up 500% pace-wise year over year. I think that we, last year in October, we had already beat the previous year's numbers by double. So it is firmly on the radar for skiers. And part of it is because of the season passes. So the Epic Pass is valid at Hakuba and at Rizutsu, and the Icon Pass is valid at Niseko and also Latte Arai, which is a lesser known one. But Japan was becoming very popular with Americans before that. But now that the passes are there, it's really exploded. So when I first started going to Niseko, Niseko is an interesting place. It's probably the most well-known one in Japan. And it shows. When I first started going, the most common accent I heard was from Australia. But now I would say that it's probably half and half. There's Australia in the U.S. So it's been discovered, and it continues to grow. New hotels going in, new chairlifts, etc. But the one that's on my radar for like an up-and-coming destination, like one that I actually really want to check out is Miyoko Kogen, which is on Honshu in Niigata. So it's kind of around Nagano, closer to Hakuba, but that's one that's really on my radar for being known to be more authentic. The ryokan, lodging, onsens, you know, I think that's offering that really true experience. And then close to there is Nozawa Onsen, which is more well known, but also a smaller resort. And one of the things that is on my bucket list, they have a fire festival there every year. And I've seen pictures, and it's in the middle of January. It's prime skiing time. And if you can get a hotel room, from what I've seen and what I've heard from friends who have been there, that should be number one on your list.
Wow. Very cool. Well, that's a huge insight. We'll have to, you know, link to some B-roll of that and put something in the show notes. I wanted to talk about, do you guys do anything with your clients in helping them market the shoulder seasons? You know, when we're working with our DMOs like Switzerland or Big Bear, you know, media kind of turns off as soon as the snow starts, because it kind of sells itself for the main season. Yeah. But you know, these mountains are open year round. Some of them are absolutely breathtaking and beautiful in the summer and in the shoulder seasons. And you have this huge, you know, downhill mountain biking, hiking, fly fishing, you know, other activities. Do you guys do anything to help market the mountains during the shoulders or the off seasons?
We definitely do. Now, ski.com is a tough one because our name doesn't scream summer. and we've tried it in a variety of ways over the years. So, you know, our loyal customers are definitely coming to us and we're sending them to the mountains in the summer.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we offer a lot of these great products that you mentioned. You know, picture in Europe, for example, we have great relationships with these ski guides doing off-piste skiing and backcountry skiing. And those same guide companies in the summer offer mountain biking and, you know, now e-biking, e-mountain biking is absolutely huge in Europe. You can even do hut-to-hut e-biking, and the huts have charging stations. So you stay the night, get up in the morning, go to the next place, your bags are waiting for you. So we have all those relationships dialed, and we definitely do what we can to help them. But we've also realized that ski.com it's an uphill battle, no pun intended. so we actually have probably 400 URLs, but they're all really focused on definitely on mountains, and most of them are winter. So we're spinning up actually a new brand called Untracked Travel. That is all season, all types of adventure travel. And we have relationships doing things that are totally outside of the skiing wheelhouse, but we're also really heavily leaning on those relationships that we have in the mountains that aren't skiing. So all of these outfitters that we have both domestically and internationally, working with them to help send them, you know, help get them clients for their, I don't want to even say off season, because in some cases the summer is more popular than the winter. And in Europe, huge focus because of climate change. Some of these major resorts are located at lower elevations, and they're kind of concerned about the future of skiing. So they're really pivoting and focusing on, I guess I'll say summer activities, but that could roll over into, you know, fall, spring, and maybe winter at some point.
Yeah, no, you're so right. And when I go to a lot of these events that are focused more on the tour operators, you know, you see how a lot of them are conglomerates, right? Like the guy that owns an ATV thing might have a kayaking business, and he's got a wine tour. You know, these are like mini little empires where they can send travelers out on a balloon ride on another day. Like they really, you know, seem to have, you know, multifaceted opportunities for travelers, especially in different seasonalities.
Yeah, those are the dream jobs. I love those guys. you know, looking at, like, there's a, well, Evolution 2 in Europe. It's a guide company. It's in several resorts, but I had the pleasure of skiing with the owner a couple of years ago in Tien, France, you know, next to Val d'Isère. And just looking through their catalog and hearing the stories and seeing it through his eyes, like, he just has the life. He's skiing all winter and doing all the electric snowmobile bikes. I don't even know what they're called, but they're snowmobiles, but they're set up like motorcycles, electric, you know, paragliding, parasailing, the micro flights, which is basically a paraglider on a go-kart, you know, flying through the Alps. It's adventure every day, all day. Love it.
Yeah. It's pretty wild. These guys, you know, it's so funny. Like, you know, I'll be at some of these conferences and I'll meet these tour operators, and, you know, some of them are homegrown family businesses that have been there for decades, if not hundreds of years. And they've been doing this for a long time, but it's not uncommon to find some guy that worked in private equity or venture capital or some other industry and just ditched the corporate life to go do this and become very successful at it because of, you know, I think like what you said, you know, the lifestyle that it provides is pretty amazing. So,
well, there's new ownership in Jackson Hole as of last year. And those guys are private equity guys and big banking backgrounds. And they came in and they're, they're obviously savvy with the financials, you know, very obviously, but they're super passionate. And I just love that. I mean, that's what worries me about, you know, the industry in general is, you know, the soul sometimes.
Yeah.
You feel the soul might be in jeopardy, but you know, there's an injection of passion. It's fantastic.
Yeah, love that. All right, man. Well, what are you most excited about the work you're doing at Ski.com for the future? What does the next 6 months to a year look like for you guys?
Well, I'm excited about it's, I have to, I re, it's amazing to me that I'm on this hamster wheel seemingly, because it's just a seasonal thing. And every year we kind of try to, you know, reinvent ourselves to a point, or try to think about doing things differently. We just have so many new things happening this year going into next year that I'm really excited about starting to do some of the, you know, lead gen marketing, and we've enabled our salespeople with some really great new tools, some great video capabilities to present packages using video, their own video. It actually kind of ties back to what we talked about earlier. I'm excited to continue to get better at showcasing our salespeople and the real people behind the brand and the experience and the expertise that they offer, and just trying to bring them to life. That always gets me excited.
I love it. Well, sounds like you guys are on the right track and continuing to reinvent. So, you know, you got to be thinking about innovation all the time, especially with how fast technology is moving. I'm just glad we made it through a marketing podcast without talking about AI. So.
Well, here's my stance on AI. I love AI. I use it all the time. And the battle that I have is that I don't like AI, direct AI to customers. I don't like that.
Yeah,
especially in our business.
Yeah.
I'm all for AI helping our people help people.
Yeah.
That's my main stance on AI.
Yeah. I think that's a great, you know, that's a great stance. I think it's not replacing humans. It's enabling humans to do their jobs better and faster. So.
Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, Dan, this was a great conversation. I really appreciate you spending time with us and the Lost In audience to let them know more about what you do over at ski.com. Anywhere you want to point our viewers, followers, subscribers, and where they could learn more about what they can book through ski.com, the types of packages and vacations that they can go on, and where people could connect with you directly if they want to reach out and say hello?
Yeah, well, back to that great URL that we have, it's pretty easy. Just go to ski.com. And for me, also pretty easy. My email is dan@ski.com. So any collaboration or questions, or you know, want to talk Japan or Europe or Aspen, you know, holler.
Let's go. Awesome, man. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us for another episode of the Layover Podcast. I hope you enjoyed what we put down with Dan today. If you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe, follow, do the things on social so you can follow and stay up to date with what we are doing and get to hear from other amazing travel influencers, travel journalists, and travel marketing leaders. And if you would give us an honest review on whatever platform you might be watching or listening, that's how the show finds a larger audience organically. And last but not least, if there's a marketer out there or somebody who, a ski enthusiast or somebody who you think would enjoy the conversation that I had with Dan today, don't forget to share the show. And with that, we will be back again next Wednesday at 4 p.m. West Coast. Thanks a lot, Dan.
Thanks, Bill.
Cheers.